I grew up in a family of boys. I'm the father of boys. It's not that I don't like girls. I actually like them very much, always did. And the value that both genders bring to our world is evident in the children we produce and the love that everyone has for them or should have for them. But I've got a question. It might be a radical one. Please don't accuse me of boyism. But should boys have a space, a place where they could be boys? And shouldn't girls have a space, a place where they can be girls? I'm not saying that girls have to play with dolls. I'd rather see girls play with bows and arrows. When my niece Leah was born, the first thing I said to her father, my brother Pete, there's the next fighter pilot. I didn't say there's a new mommy coming or there's a person that's going to give hugs and be a social justice warrior. I saw her as a fighter pilot in the crib. Now they're changing the Boy Scouts. I like the idea that girls should be encouraged to pursue whatever they want to pursue. And that means if girls want to learn how to shoot and ride and camp, I think everyone should learn how to shoot and ride and camp. Boys too. But kids need a place where they can be kids amongst themselves. And I'm wondering about whether or not this new move to change the Boy Scouts is part of a political correct thing. Here's what gets me. Right now, I'm sipping an iced tea lemonade. I got it at the Starbucks. And I'm in the Starbucks, and I see these young men, you know, about 4 or 5. They have this certain thing. I don't know what it is. The cuff pants, they're skinny. They look like the guys on the telephone ads. You know the cell phone ads? Can you hear me now? Or the other guy that's got the little beard, and he speaks in a gentle voice. He's gentle. I'm told this is what's called a beta male. And beta males are the new ideal. And I wonder what that means, really. But you see them reflected in advertising culture. They're the ones promoted as the new male, beta males. I think that's just as ridiculous as having he-men tell you that if you don't drink their light beer, they'll punch you in the face. Because that was the one a few years ago. Be a he-man, drink light beer, or we'll kill you. And some guy with a craggy jaw and the Kirk Douglas dimple. Okay, I have that dimple myself, but there's nothing wrong with it. But I'm not going to go tell somebody, be a man, drink light beer. Or I'm not going to speak in a little high voice and say, can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? All that is advertising. Culture informs human condition. It tells us how we're supposed to be. And all that is part of politics. And I get it, the patriarchy. Let's destroy it. Let's just have one man to serve the population needs of the entire world. But when it comes to raising boys, there comes a time when boys need to be amongst themselves with men, teaching them how to be men. Just like girls need to be amongst themselves with women, teaching them how to be women. Is this a radical idea? Am I going to be accused of hate now? I don't think so. So on the Boy Scout thing, I really think it's a good idea that girls want to be scouts. I just wish that they'd have Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts. Or scouts with girl troops and boy troops. And leave the social justice warrior stuff aside. And let the girls be girls, whatever they want to be, how they want to be. And let the boys be boys. And help each one, each group, try to be the best they can be. And take your damn politics out of it, because there are kids. And they need help. They don't need to be lab rats in your social justice warrior experiment. They're the future, and without them, we're really nothing. This is the Chicago Way. I'm John Cass. Jeff Carlin is here as usual, the master pie maker who still hasn't made me a pie this year. I'm counting on like 10 episodes, Jeff. And later on, we're going to have Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics join us. There's so much going on. We have to talk about Trump. Is it okay to lie now if you're the president about sex, but it wasn't okay to lie before about sex? The world is upside down.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. with pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Hey, Jeff, you looking at the papers lately?
Every day.
You looking at the papers every day? I'm still employed. I'm still working at the Tribune.
Right. And the Tower, for what it's worth.
In the Tower, yeah.
While it's worth.
Yeah, but there was a story the other day about these coaches, refs won't.
Yeah.
Front page of the Tribune by Kate Thayer.
Great piece.
Great piece on kids who don't want to be refs. Refs are being driven out of sport by parents and coaches of youth teams. Can I tell you something? That's true. One of my sons wants to be a coach, Peter, and he's working with Special Olympics now. He's working with a soccer club as well. He's going to student teach. He just wants to be a coach and a teacher. And you know what he's concerned about? The parents.
Oh, man, yeah.
How do you manage? Because that's part of coaching now. You have to manage the parents.
Yeah. I mean, I was an umpire as a kid. That was my first official job. I worked for the Park District. You could sign a waiver so you could work under the, I was like 13, 14, so you didn't have to meet that, the work requirement as long as it was for the government. And it was for in the summer, and it was just, essentially babysitting kids playing sports. But that was always the toughest thing was the parents. Parents, it's evolutionary, the fact that when their offspring aren't doing well, they think their offspring are being mistreated, they see red instantaneously. But you know what's interesting? My brother has young kids, and they have a league out in the suburbs of Chicago. And my brother coaches their team, my niece's team. And the coaches are now responsible for the decorum of the parents.
Good.
And if the parents step out of the line, the coach is ejected. Not the parent. The coach is ejected.
Is it soccer or baseball?
It's baseball, softball. But also goes for soccer. I mean, the soccer league's out there as well. Same rules apply.
I think that's a good
look. I love it. I think it's brilliant.
Because, for one thing, if you have little kids, everybody, no matter what you say, if you say a lot or not, it won't have any bearing on whether they're signed by Barcelona right. or the Yankees. Really, it won't. You're just going to make yourself look like a jerk. My advice, get the latte, the canvas chair, go sit at the sit away from the parents who are chirping, because you know what your kids hate? They hate when you chirp. You know why? Not that you're involved in the game. They love that you support them and everything. But parents are always late with the call.
Right.
So that the kids are embarrassed because they're playing at one speed and you're cheering at slow speed.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like it. They're embarrassed by it. Yes, Jeff?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And then, you're in the moment, and all of a sudden, now your friends are looking at you because the game has been stopped, because your parents are yakking at the ref or the umpire. It's just,
All right, I got a yellow card once as a parent.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you know what a yellow card is? That is a cautionary card. Second one, you get kicked out. If you're a player, I walk to the end of the field, and here comes Marty, I'm not going to say his last name, who is in charge of all the referees. And Marty and I are watching our kids play soccer for a great soccer club out in the Western Burbs called Lions Township Soccer Club. It's one of the best. And kids, I think they were about 13 or something, and they're playing. And Marty says something. My son Spiro he was always getting fouled because he was scoring goals. So everyone, you foul a guy. Yeah. He's doing well.
He's too fast.
And so somebody fouls him. No big deal. It's just part of the game. Marty says something. I say something. The ref turns around and says, and all I said was, does he have to wear pads and a helmet or something like that? Low key. And the ref turns around and says, one more word out of you. Okay, and I'm like mortified. I look at Betty. Betty is like,
oh God,
mouth open again. You know, and Marty's wife is looking at us both like, you guys suck. And we weren't really saying, but the ref was, I guess, had enough. And we didn't say a lot. So then, 30 seconds later, the ref turns his back and Marty says something like, you don't know what you're doing. Or, is this your first game? And then Marty turns on his heel and walks away. And I'm like looking at him like, what did you? The ref turns to me and goes, yellow card. The mark of yellow on my forehead.
Oh, no.
He could have just touched me with it. I would have fallen over in shame. I got a yellow card because of Marty walking away. Oh. And Marty knows it, and so does everybody else. But it's a good thing that they hold the parents accountable.
Yeah, that's how it should be. And it's a shame because, you know, sports is a great equalizer of kids. I mean, because, you know, there's always a level, or there's always some sport, or there's something for kids. You know, it gives you the ability to realize the beach theory. I don't know if you've ever heard of the beach theory, John, but, you know, people always... they equivocated over what they're going to wear to the beach or going to the beach. And there's always the idea you're going to like, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm too fat, I'm too tall, I'm too bald, I'm too whatever. But when you go to the beach, there's always somebody who looks better in their swimsuit than you or not as good as you in a swimsuit.
Or you don't go to the beach and you just sit in your chair with your straw hat on and smoke a cigar at the house while everyone goes to the beach,
which
is what I suggest.
Right. Well, there's that too. But the idea is that there's always somebody better or somebody not as good. There's it, no matter what, everything in life.
And nothing the parent, you know what? Here's one other thing. Parents, you love to coach your kid because you want your kid to pitch and have the confidence. If he's not a good pitcher, don't make him pitch just to make you feel better.
Relive some dream.
Just come on, man. It's the same like with coaching. Like I see some of the coaching of soccer by parents.
Mm-hmm.
Their kid always ends up like as forward.
Right.
So he can toe poke a goal. Well, guess what? He's not learning the game. She's not learning the game. You learn the game by playing from the back, playing all the positions, going forward, learning midfield. That's the learning the game. So the kid, the one place you can hide somebody, the one place you can hide a player who's not good is forward.
Right wing.
Or maybe. But forward for sure. You know? So take your kids to a good soccer program when they're like 6 years old, seven. There's Lionstown, LTSC. I would suggest the Magic, the Chicago Fire. And soccer's on the northwest side, Schwaben, another one. All these are good clubs. They have really good coaches, and they don't care about what the mommy or daddy says. They're trying to teach these kids how to play. Same with baseball.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a travel baseball team, though, and the dad of the alpha male is the manager, and you're a kid, you got to be thinking, oh, man,
yeah,
what am I here for? Like, am I here to play ball, or is this some sort of, you know?
Yeah, you're living out some sort of psychological.
Yeah, it gets weird.
Come up and think about, parents need to think about that. You need to think about that, the fact that you're out there, you know, you're going to make it hell for some kid who, or even an adult who's roughing or umpiring a game, and then they're not going to want to do it, and guess what? The kids beyond your kids aren't going to have anybody. Because that's the story. The story was that they are having trouble finding refs and umpires to do work these leagues, and so the leagues can't put on, you know, games.
You know what? Those leagues are going to have to charge more money to get men.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you were an umpire at 13, when I was 13, I had, like, men umpires,
mm-hmm.
and they would stay, when they said strike, when they would go, like, loud,
yeah.
It scared the crap out of me. First, you're scared by the fastball, then you hear that sound of the umpire screaming. It's like, too much. And they're gonna have to have older men, you know, and they're gonna cost money.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gonna be more money for you to pay. Yeah. So keep your mouth shut, drink your latte, and listen to Jeff Carlin. Right?
Yeah. And speaking of balls and strikes, our next guest, calling balls and strikes, our next guest, Tom Bevin. I'm glad he's here because this is the week for it. There's so much goofy news that needs dissecting between the Kanye stuff and the Rudy Giuliani coming out and apparently not having his facts straight, according to the president. And oh, it's just been a lot of fun.
I just wonder if you can you pay for sex or not pay for sex. Can you can't pay for it, but the taxpayers can?
Right.
Years ago, the taxpayers paid for sex of the elected officials
right.
through jobs. Now,
internships you even.
You know, I can't keep all these complicated thoughts in my puny little brain.
Now you argued my cause in the second, and you argued my cause in the third. Now you're booing my cause in the seventh. This is getting a little absurd. Now your team, they're down by a dozen, yet you still say that I am to blame. Well, I'm sick of your whine and you're way out of line, so I'm tossing you out of this game. Cause I'm the umpire, what I say goes. There's a
like I said, the world is upside down. It used to be wrong. Let's see. Let me get it straight. It was okay to lie about sex if you were the president. But now it's not okay to lie about paying a porn star for sex, just an intern who didn't get paid or something. Everything's upside down. And given that, we're going to talk to Tom Bevin of Real Clear Politics, founder and publisher of this amazing website and also the host of his own radio program that I've been a honored guest on, the Tom Bevin Show on WLS. Good morning, Tom Bevin.
Mr. Cass, how are you?
Is the world upside down? What is with this Stormy Daniels porn thing?
The world is definitely spinning off its axis a little bit, and there is hypocrisy. There are two things about it. One is hypocrisy is rampant, obviously, and that's in some ways understandable because we have two very polarized parties and who are very good at sort of situational ethics. The other thing is that there is no moral high ground. I mean, there just is not. For anybody who tries to claim moral high ground in this environment, it does not exist. For every porn star payoff, you can mention, you know, people who say Trump has debased the office. Oh, really? Oh, well, conveniently forgetting Bill Clinton. For everything that you think that, you know, Trump is an authoritarian dictator who wants to throw, you know, beating up on the press and calls him the enemy of the public and wants to, you know, throw him in jail. You have an Obama who actually did put people in prison and wiretap, you know, his administration.
Right.
So there's just whenever anybody comes with some sort of argument seeking to take some moral high ground, it doesn't exist and it falls flat on the ears of anyone who is on the other side. And so we're constantly talking past each other about a lot of this stuff.
The outrage meter seems to have been broken because it was full-on outrage from the moment he was elected. We've talked about this in our business, which has discredited itself by latching on to a particular point of view and then pushing it even to the point when you're wrong on facts, like, you know, NBC the other day pushing the idea that Trump's lawyer was wiretapped and then speculating about it endlessly and then having to turn around and say, oh, sorry, we were wrong. It looks like we've broken the outrage meter.
I definitely agree with that. I mean, there is, and I've said this before, probably on your podcast with you, you know, and this was evident very early on in the administration within the first 30, 60, 100 days that the media treated everything that Donald Trump did like a five-alarm fire. And they've continued to do that throughout the first 15 months of the administration. And when everything's a five-alarm fire, nothing is, because the public can't discern what's really important, what's not important. What is a big deal? What isn't a big deal? And certainly you have Trump supporters who look at his tweets and don't take them, you know, as seriously or as literal as the media takes them. And then you also have this thrown into that mix, Sean, is what you just mentioned, which is this credibility gap with the media, because they've gotten so many stories wrong over time. They've pounded the drum on this collusion idea for over a year now, and we're still waiting for some sort of concrete evidence that there was collusion. It seems like we've moved on from collusion to obstruction. We're now beyond obstruction to Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. And was there some sort of FEC violation? Was there some sort of, you know, business improprieties in the Trump empire that involved, you know,
everything's a process. Money? Everything's a process crime. Outrage or something.
Correct. And you still have the media, treating all these revelations as if they're, these huge things, and with outrage. I mean, Ken Delanian, who's the NBC, one of the NBC reporters, you probably saw this on Twitter, he tweeted the news about that story yesterday by saying, boom. Boom. Like, this was his, like a bomb was dropping on Trump's head, and, you know, they had this exclusive, and it turned out the exclusive wasn't even right, and they had to change it and correct it.
Drop the mic. End of debate. Yeah. It's over. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's the sort of attitude that's the sort of attitude that journalists have, the ones who are supposed to be being the quote unquote nonpartisan objective journalists. We have a real problem, and it's resulted in a real disconnect. The media has suffered. I think the presidency has suffered. I think the country has suffered.
Trump also does not help that with his, you know, loudmouth antics. I mean, he doesn't help it by lying, clearly, you know, saying, no, I knew nothing about Stormy Daniels. Who's Stormy Daniels?
Totally agree.
Right?
I totally agree. This is and that's the other frustrating thing about this, is there's plenty of blame to go around on both sides. And you know, Trump's not changing his behavior. He continues to, you know, tweet and say things that are untrue and that are, you know, over the top and ridiculous. And the media has not changed their behavior. They've continued to breathlessly report false information, information that's speculative, all this stuff. And so we're locked in this real, vicious cycle between Trump and the media. And for the average news consumer, I mean, I think they've just, a lot of them have tuned it out. It's a little more difficult for those of us who do this for a living to have to put up with this stuff every single day, because it is, it's exhausting. It is absolutely frustrating. You keep wanting it to somehow get better and for people to start behaving themselves. And it just never happens. And so we're stuck in this really crappy limbo.
Here's the problem. There are serious things out there. One is North Korea. Another is, what is our relationship with China vis-a-vis Russia? Is Russia really the antagonist, or do we have to really worry about China? There's a war in Syria. Anybody remember that? And our Congress doesn't seem to want to get involved and take a definitive stand one way or another. There are many, many, many problems in the world that require sober analysis and credibility to even begin to define terms. But if we continue with this, I'm not defending Trump. I mean, my position, I think we share the position. Let the investigations proceed. But this constant hysteria takes us away from hurts our credibility as an institution, and we need to have that to inform the public about serious things outside of Trump world.
Yeah, well, certainly there are big issues and things that are happening around the world that do not get the amount of attention that they deserve, certainly relative to a lot of the, you know, process stories, intrigue stories, shiny objects that we follow, the media follows here in the United States on a daily basis. Absolutely true. I think with regard to the Mueller investigation, I'm more of the mindset that not that this investigation should continue. I think the investigation has already shown that it's gone a little bit far afield from the original intent, which was Was there or was there not collusion? Please answer that question substantively, definitively, to the best extent that you can. Hey, you've been at this for over a year. Was there collusion? Was there not collusion? And we are no longer really even talking about that. And I think that is a problem. And in this sense, I think that Rudy Giuliani and Trump, you know, there's a lot of, when you talk to folks in the White House, they're aggrieved at the situation because they feel like this thing has spiraled out of control, and it all happened when Session recused himself, and you had all these deep staters, you know, that sort of drove this investigation. And there is evidence to support those accusations. But I tend to agree that, look, the Mueller thing, and it's not an easy fix, because you can't say to Mueller, you've got a year to do this, and then, you know, your time expires, because that would obviously make people try and run out the clock and hide things and obfuscate and stonewall, you know. On the other hand, I just don't know that you can be like, well, just take your time and let them, you know, let the investigation proceed as long as you want and let it go wherever you want. And, you know, because that is impacting, I think, Trump's ability to, the Trump administration's ability to move on some of these things, which, let's face it, they are spending a lot of time obsessing over this, a lot of man hours, you know, battling with the media over this, all that stuff. And it's not good. It's obviously not good for the Trump administration, but it's not good for the country either to try and have this this cloud hanging over the administration. And the speculation, did they collude with Russia? That would be obviously a huge deal and potentially an impeachable offense. So let's answer the question and be done with it.
Tom, and while we've got you, and you made a great point earlier too, talking about how there are lots of things that are distracting. And any of the journalists that I think are true journalists that I follow and respect are the ones who always throw out the idea, you know, there's essentially a genocide going on all over the world, and Americans are essentially deaf to them because we're caught up in the glitz and glamour of the hot news story on the 24-hour channels and the mainstream media. The Kanye West thing this week is a perfect example of that. I mean, it's a story that really isn't a story, but because Kanye West is somebody else, and John's shaking his head at me, but it's one of these distractive pieces that really has no real impact on anything in the world, but everybody is talking about it. And I was just going to get your take on something like that. And you see stories like that because, I mean, you're obviously very famous for culling news and making it digestible in the perfect sense and the stuff that's important.
So, Jeff, I'm going to disagree with you on this one because I actually think the Kanye West thing has potential implications. And because of the fact, now I know, look, there's a lot of debate about Kanye and whether he's, you know, how smart he is, not smart he is, whether he's doing this for publicity or whatever. Okay, set that aside for a second. Because in this period of American history, American political history, where the two sides are polarized, very polarized, you just went through, and you know, the African-American vote has been voting en masse for Democrats for a long time, certainly solidified under Obama and continues under Trump. And there is this culture of sort of political correctness to the point where you can't say anything. If you are a liberal or progressive, you cannot voice even the slightest possible. I mean, Shania Twain, for example, and this is a common thing, right? She says, oh, I would have voted for Trump. And she literally is mobbed. She is mau-mau'd by the mob to the point where within 24 hours, she has to say, I take it back. I didn't mean it. I was taken out of context, whatever. Okay. That is a serious, significant part of our culture right now. And when you have someone of Kanye's stature among that set stand up and say, I think the thing he said about slavery was stupid, and probably diminished his standing and made it easier for progressives to be like, oh, Kanye is just, you know, he's lost his mind, he's his mental health, you know, all that stuff, and dismiss him. But prior to that, when he said, look, you know, we can not, and Chance the Rapper saying, not all blacks have to be Democrats, and, you know, I love Trump, I think that's actually a pretty significant thing in our current political dynamic, because if that were something that were to, you know, take hold, and I'm not saying it is, but that could have profound implications on our politics, because right now, the way things are structured, obviously, demographics are moving against Republicans, but, you know, the Democrats continue to win only if they get 95, 97% of the African-American vote and 75%, 76%, 77% of the Hispanic vote. If those numbers drop 5 points, 10 points, Democrats are in a world of hurt. And so that's why I think you saw the red, you know, the alarm bells going off over Kanye, because he's such a cultural icon and a guy who young voters and, you know, millennials and all these folks, they admire, they look up to, and they, you know, they like his music and all that stuff. So I actually think it was a big deal. And look, as I said, I think the slavery comment was stupid. And I think a lot of the commentary around Kanye has been sort of, you know, maybe not the smartest. There have been a lot of hot takes on it. But just in and of itself, I thought it was actually not an insignificant story.
Oh, no. And John and I have had this conversation, and he's brought me to the light on it. And I appreciate wholeheartedly that the fallout is the story. The reaction to it is the story. But it should have never been a story in the first place, because there are so many more important things out there. That people are jumped on this thing because one famous guy says something.
Because culture is important. Because that is, the left has defined the world in terms of the culture who can speak and who cannot speak, as Tom said. So when someone, in that definition, that it's already been defined. So if someone stands out, now we're seeing, I hesitate to do the slave metaphor. But it's almost like with the liberals, it's like John Amos as Kunta Kinte getting hamstrung, because they cannot stand for anyone to go off their mixed metaphors reservation. And if Kanye, who is really not a thinker of any great import, is allowed to do that without being trashed, others may follow. Right, Tom? That's where the danger is to me.
I think for the Democrats, it certainly is. And I was trying to think of an example of a conservative, you know, if you were to flip the script and try and name a conservative who came out and said, you know, said something similar. But I don't even know that there's a conservative that has that sort of cultural status.
Conservatives left left the Republican Party many years ago. You're speaking of one. Left, you know, I left after the Iraq War. After that, you know, weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah. Business. So I don't know that there's an equivalent analogy on the right, but I do think, John, you make the point, and it's a point that Andrew Breitbart used to make, which is politics is downstream of culture, right?
Yes.
Culture matters a lot to our politics, and in that sense, Kanye is a significant cultural icon, and when he says something like that, it's potentially you know, a pretty big deal.
And when he is attacked, there's an element of his audience that will see that as Kanye being forced to step off the corner.
Sure.
By little beta males with fuzzy pink hats on Twitter, you know, and it doesn't work in the community.
It is a rare. I mentioned Shania Twain. I mean, you've seen multiple examples of folks who have, to use your phrasing, John, gone off the reservation, and very quickly. I mean, it takes a lot of courage and willingness, quite frankly, to be ostracized and excommunicated, and, you know, to say something like that and then not go back on it, but stand strong in the face of the opprobrium that you get from members of your own, you know, clan. And Kanye has shown no signs that he's taking anything back or you know, stepping down or whatever.
Someday, Tom, I might write a column about for you about what is it like to be a conservative at the Chicago Tribune.
There you go.
Behind the lines.
Exactly.
I implore both of you and anybody else listening to also take into account for the Kanye thing. There's a theory, and it's a pretty interesting theory by a journalist or a media blogger type named Spencer Wolf, who wrote this piece that essentially outlining the idea that this is actually just a long, drawn-out, Andy Kaufman-esque performance piece that Kanye is doing to try to get people to jump and think about how they feel about being forced into believing certain things that are true with the Trump hat, with the slavery piece. And there's a whole trail of tweets and stuff that Kanye's put out for the past few months since he returned, quote-unquote, to Twitter. It's really interesting. It's Spencer Wolf, if you get a chance to check it out. But it draws a pretty good parallel between Andy Kaufman's career and what Kanye is doing now. And now that he's got an album coming out, it's all a perfect storm for him.
Sure. Just like Joaquin Phoenix when he did that, was supposedly doing a documentary about being a rapper, and he played the part for a year and went on Letterman. I mean, it certainly would not be beyond Kanye to do something like that. And someone else had just said this. I mean, he's all about publicity. That's what he thrives on. That's what he's after. Now, I'm not willing to say 100% that's all this is about. It might be about more than that, but I certainly wouldn't discount the fact that the guy is just, perhaps doing this to rattle some cages and make some news for himself as he goes to, drop new songs and promote a new album.
But politics is always downstream of culture. And Tom Bevan, if you want to know, if you want to step outside your own little media box, everybody, because we all go to the people that, feed us what we want to eat. And some of us have been eating only fried fatty foods lately. And I suggest to go to Real Clear Politics and click on that, because that's what John Cass does every morning in my Serenity Garden. With my cup of coffee out on the deck.
And your strawberries.
And my strawberries. I read, you will see different points of view by excellent writers. And to be on Real Clear Politics is a great honor. And by the way, thanks for running my column on Alfie Evans the other day. I appreciate it.
I love that column. That was great. That was an A-plus effort, Mr. Cass.
Mr. Tom Bevan, thanks for joining the Chicago Way. We'll see you soon, okay?
All right, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks,
Jeff Carlin, what else? What's on your mind, Jeff?
Well, I am a man of science, so science is always on my mind.
You who are so wise in the ways of science, can a duck float, and is it a witch or something other in the science?
Churches,
world?
Little tiny rocks. John, we mentioned this off air, but you and I both follow Westworld, and if people haven't followed Westworld, there's only one season in, it's very heavy.
Think of this, sex bots with guns.
Yeah, it's...
Okay? That's basically what it is.
It's in its carnal sense, yes. But there's so much more to it, and I was watching it this past weekend and thinking about our conversation from last week about the organs and the pigs, and when I interjected that, John, don't worry, AI is going to kill us all before we get to that point. Westworld reinforced that with this last week's episode. I think everybody should watch it because it is... have such a great commentary on society and people, escapism, and a whole mentality of stuff we kind of talked about last week, and where it could ultimately lead and essentially corrupt us and destroy us as society and humans.
Did you ever hear of the planet, the forbidden planet, Talos 4?
Mm-mm.
I think it's Talos 4 or Talos 6, the planet that you cannot go to. If you go to this planet, you will be in violation of the Federation rules, and you probably could be executed. Because the Talosians are tiny little people with huge brains, and they went into escape fantasy. Their technology was so good, like the Westworld, where virtual reality became reality for them. And you cannot escape it once you're there. Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Christopher Pike understood and learned all about it. But in Westworld,
yes,
you've got this world where people get lost. Now, I'm trying to figure out something about it, okay? Thandi Newton, she's the hot madam, but she's also like a revolution. She's just on a revenge thing. She wants to kill everybody and find her daughter, even though she knows she has no daughter.
Right.
She just has a little robot daughter that she kind of liked. And the other one, what's her name? The blonde,
Rachel Wood.
Yeah. She's like the revolutionary robot leading a pack of robots to like, what?
Reclaim themselves.
Reclaim them. But if you were a robot, wouldn't you want to get the hell out of there?
Well,
and put on some blue jeans and a t-shirt and just like blend in and live?
Well, they like the world they're in. It's such a good, it's crazy.
And then what's with Floki?
Which one's Floki?
Floki is, from the Vikings.
Oh, I never.
The scientist from the Vikings.
I never saw the Vikings.
He's now the mercenary leader. He's in the first episode of the new season. Right. That
he's coming in to cleanse the
dangerous. Yeah.
It's a great show, but I don't want to give too much away because in fact, I don't even know what I would give away other than that a lot happening, and they do a very good job with it.
Speaking of fantasies,
yeah.
Is there a fantasy that we're having a mayoral campaign in Chicago?
Yeah, I do believe.
Because I'll tell you what's not a fantasy. I'm just going to drop this quickly. Sun-Times editorials.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. They might as well just endorse Rahm now. It looks like they're carrying water for the Rahm father. That's all I want to say about that. I really don't know anything about the newspaper business. There's something else I wanted to talk to you about, and it really bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you a story. The other day, my friend Deshaun, he lives in Englewood, he's a chemist. He calls me up and says, let's go to lunch. I've got a great place. Five Rabanitos on 18th and Wood. It is awesome. So we go. I had this sandwich there that was like spicy and it was just delicious. It was great. Okay, so two guys, one from Englewood, one born in Englewood, white suburbanite now, black guy, eating Mexican food at Five Rabanitos, and it's awesome. You should try it. But I wondered, I didn't get a permission slip.
Uh-oh.
I tweeted it out, put it on Facebook. Do you need a permission slip to like ethnic foods? Or can you be trashed if I support like a certain ethnicity, some like food or dress or clothing? Well, will I be Twitter shamed like this poor little girl who wore a prom dress and was shamed in Twitter?
For those who aren't familiar with the story, it was a young woman wore a Chinese, traditional Chinese or Japanese dress. I think it was Chinese.
Yeah.
Dress to her proms, and she was in love with it. It was a beautiful dress. It was very unique to Chinese culture. But the implication by people who are supposedly defenders of Chinese culture are saying that they're bashing her for misappropriating and essentially making gains off of someone else's culture. And I give her credit because the young woman, she just followed up with people and said, "What? Get off your high horse. It's a beautiful dress, comes from a beautiful culture, and I wanted to wear it for a beautiful time in my beautiful culture."
But what is with the outrage people of Twitter? It's like a total, like, it's become like a, social media has become like a lefty screaming pit because they ripped on this woman. Thousands of people ripped on her, tore her up. Why? Because she wore a dress. She liked to wear a dress. How dare you?
Mm-hmm.
You're a white girl. You're wearing a dress. How dare you? You're culturally appropriating.
Right.
What is that all about, man? You know, I'm an immigrant son. I grew up here not thinking I was American. wanting to be American, not thinking I was. People would tell me I wasn't. No, you're not American. You're not like us.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be. And you know what? What's great about America? We're all different. We're all different. You know, they say that diversity is great, but then they really don't mean they like diversity. They just want to keep people separate. That means like a Greek kid, a American of Greek descent, pardon me, can go to a Mexican place with a black guy from his old neighborhood and eat this great food and be friends, talk about a lot of different stuff. A girl, a young woman, a white woman can wear a prom dress that's an Asian dress and love it and celebrate the beauty of that. Asian people can, what, drive a Bentley if they want? I mean, if they can afford it, or play tennis, or English. What would the English do that's countercultural or counter, you know, play soccer? No, they do.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean something. Right. What I mean is we can all do what we want to do because we're American.
Yeah.
And this whole idea about cultural appropriation and who owns what culture and shut your mouth, you can't like this because you're not of that culture, or you shouldn't talk, like you own it. You don't own, hey, everybody, you don't own anything. You don't own your own culture. You're part of it. And you're sharing it with all of us because we're Americans and that's what we do. Drop the hyphens. We're not going to end up like Yugoslavia if I can help it. Drop the hyphens. Start liking each other and celebrating what we do that's different. But remember, the first identification is not your Greek, not your English, not your Latino, not your black or African-American. The first identification is, I'm an American. And keep it that way, damn it. Or we're going to lose it.
Absolutely. And for the record, the Chinese social media site Weibo, which is essentially their version of like Twitter, Instagram, kind of.
Yeah.
This young lady from Utah, she is being heralded as a rock star. That people are awesome. In Chinese culture are actually thanking her for sharing the beauty of their culture with other people who wouldn't normally have be exposed to it or even see it.
I mean, it's a lot smaller for me to go with Deshaun to get this great Mexican sandwich and share it with my Greek relatives, but it's the same thing. We share what we find is beautiful.
Right?
Let's share, man. Sharing. Sit on the ground in a circle, pass that talking stick to each other, and share. But for now, for Jeff Carlin, WGN Radio, for Tom Bevan of Real Clear Politics, for my friend Deshaun, who turned me on to Five Robinitos, and for the young lady who wore that beautiful dress to prom, and for all of you out there, find us on Twitter, find us on iTunes, give us a good review, because I want to keep doing this, just like I want to keep writing. I'm having a lot of fun. I just think this is going to be a huge year. We're selecting a new mayor in Chicago, new governor. Media landscape is changing every minute. Who knows what is going to happen? But no matter what happens and how it changes, one thing will never change. Not in my lifetime. And you know what that is? What doesn't change is the Chicago way.